The meeting will come to order, and today is Thursday, March the 4th, 1982. This is the Health, Education, and Social Services Committee meeting. I'm Chairman Mike Byrne, and the also President Representative Sally Smith and Representative Betty Cato. The bills today for discussion are going to be House Bill 492, dealing with related to student loans for part-time post-secondary education for students, and House Bill 709, which is our scholarship loan bill. And I think that's all the bills we have for today scheduled. And Representative Cato, you have some comments on...
Chairman Byrne, I would like to suggest that we, perhaps if anyone wants to talk about Section 1, but I think it needs a little more work, and the deleting of Section 2 completely. I've just been talking to Kerry Roundsberg. The rest is not necessary for this bill. The drafter put it on because of some hesitancy or fear of people not really understanding the situation. But from section, on page 4, from section line 4 down, starting on line 5, the rest of the bill is not necessary.
Page 4, you say?
Yes.
That's of the original bill, 492, right? You're saying section 2 on is not needed?
Section 2 on is not needed.
So, section 2, section 3, section on up through.
Right. And it's just additional pages that are absolutely not needed, not necessary to be. It's merely a repetition
of the existing...
of the existing law, and some of it would have to be corrected from the changes that were made last year.
So really, only section 1 is the only...
Section 1 is the only one that is relevant to the bill itself. And this is an act relating to student loans, establishing a state loan program for part-time post-secondary education students, blah, blah. The intent of this bill is to make available to individuals who have difficulty in taking single credit courses or small courses that, because they're working, would make them part-time students. And that very possibly they could take advantage of, say, one class one semester and one class the next semester. And there is a definite need in the state for this. You have in front of you a letter from Ken Kirk stating that at the present time there isn't anything like this, and that HB 492 is designed to fill that limited need. It does not establish a program like full loan. You can all read, I don't have to tell you what it says. The idea of this, and the only monies involved, have to do with tuition, fees, and books. This does not include babysitting, it does not include transportation, it does not include food, housing, or anything else. And one of the things that brought this to my attention was the fact that I spent the summer as a tour escort, and I was in Fairbanks a great deal, and found out that virtually everybody in Fairbanks goes to school. And there are many people, I mean, because the university's there, they take advantage of it, and they take a lot of night courses.
Of course, a lot of them may be going on student, or on tuition waivers that...
Yes, which they won't have anymore, which is all the more reason for this type of bill. And the real point for me to get at it also has to do with community colleges. People who are working full-time, community colleges only teach certain courses at night. They will be able to pick up those. If they're working on a degree, that would enable them to... I have a friend that took her 12 years to get her degree because she went to school at night. And she had 5 children, and it was really... I mean, the tuition, books, and fees were really a bad thing. The beautiful thing about this is a repayment plan. And that is a repayment that starts within 120 days. So really what it is an emergency student loan type situation.
Emergency, huh? Well, there's a tremendous fiscal note on this darn thing.
Kerry Romsberg is here to explain that fiscal note.
Well, why don't you come forward, Dr. Romsberg, and give us a review of this.
For the record, I am Kerry Romsberg, Director of the Commission on Post-Secondary Education. The best way to start on this really is the second page of the fiscal note, which is the attachment to it. I think this will give you an idea of the magnitude of what we're talking about. This is fall 1980. We don't have fall 81 yet, but fall 1980, for the university system alone, these are not the private institutions in the state of Alaska, for the total system, just almost half, 49.6, about half of the students, of the degree credit students, were enrolled for less than 4 semester hours.
That makes them part-time, right?
Well, it certainly does. In fact, you have to be less than 12 to be part-time. So going to Part B, you can see that 76%, almost 20,000 people there, are enrolled for less than full-time. That's for the total system. And of course, it's higher in the community college system, as Representative Cato was pointing out, than it is in the university centers. For instance, you'll notice under Part 3B, as many as 84% of the community college students in the fall of 80 were enrolled for less than full time.
So if that's right then, 76.4% of the university students are part-time.
That's total. Of the university centers under Part 2, it's 65.1. You notice 2B?
What's the difference now between total university?
It combines. Number one.
Combines community colleges?
Right. It combines university centers and community colleges into the total university.
I see.
So you have three figures. A combined figure on top, university centers in number two, and then the community colleges. Mm. But you can see even in the university centers, you got 65% of your people are part-time people. So we have a very high number of part-timers. Okay, then if you go to the fiscal note, the reason it is as high as it is, if you go down to the analysis portion, you'll notice that for fiscal 83, we estimate 15,000 borrowers. The reason that's so many borrowers is because you have two semesters in there. That $275 is about what it would cost to borrow for your books and tuition for one semester at about a 6 or an 8 hour enrollment. So if you had 7,500 borrowers in the fall and 7,500 in the spring, you'd end up with 15,000 people borrowing under this program in that fiscal year at an average of $275 each time for $4 million. That's why it's so high. We wouldn't have 15,000 people borrowing in the fall, for instance. But we could have that many borrowing when we combine the two semesters together. The repayment would begin, if you'll notice, in the next year, you'll see that you're starting to get some loan collections in, because repayments begin 120 days after the loan is issued. So if a person enrolls in the fall, they would have to start beginning their payments during the spring. And I've got a little sheet here that will help clear that up a little bit. This is just an example. If you notice under Part B, Part A summarizes the conditions. Under Part B, this is just an average person borrowing an average loan of $275 next year. September 2nd is when school starts, this coming September. So that's when the clock begins for these loans, $275. 120 days after that, which would be January 1st, 83, the loan payments would begin at 5% interest, and with 12 months to pay, it would cost $24.07 a month.
Unless?
No, there is no unless with this program.
What if the person enrolled for another part-time course on January the 1st?
That's what this person does. This person enrolls on January 13th when the spring semester starts. It doesn't matter. They still have to pay $24 a month during that enrollment period, and they could conceivably borrow another $275 or more or less, but an average of $275 for the spring semester. Mm-hmm. Then in May 13th, they would start making their monthly payments of $24.07 on their second loan, for a total payment of $48.14 until that repayment period would be completed. Now, on the bottom, if you see all these little lines and charts, that's what this shows you. The dotted line is attendance. It says you start in January, or you start in September, and you attend to through January, and then you go to the spring term.
Mm-hmm.
During the spring term, while you're attending, the solid line on top says you're making payments. You're making a loan payment. That loan payment is going to run for 12 months. When summer gets there, the person will be making two loan payments. Now, what I don't have on here, Mr. Chairman, is if the person borrowed for summer, which they could, then in the fall, they would have three loan payments. I didn't put that on here, but they could do that.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with it. This is just a person going only during the regular year. And then, of course, it would stop after 12 months. You notice the first solid line there stops from starts in 183, stops in 184, because the loan has to be repaid in full by then.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just continues on and on and on. That's the way the program would work.
One thing that I would like to, as I say, I like this repayment plan, because of the fact the money does come back to the system and comes back rapidly.
Fast, yeah.
It's not a case of forgiveness. It's not a case of 5 or 10 years for payback. It does come back and replace it and replenish it so that another student can take advantage of it.
And in fact, if you look at the fiscal notes, you'll notice that the first year you'd have no funds coming in to speak of. The next year you'd have just under $2 million coming in loan collections. If you look under part, the second part under funding there, then it goes to $4 million and $4.5 million, and then up to 4.8, almost $5 million. So the general fund commitment, although it's big the first year, 4.5, it goes down to 3.5, then it goes down to 2.3 million, then it'll start coming up again because we're going to have, assuming that we have higher enrollment periods and more student borrowers, and costs going up, to start creeping up a little bit from there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the administration costs are on there too, because there certainly would be administration costs. You're talking about expanding considerably for repayment and awards.
You don't have any administration expenses built in here then?
Yes. Yes, we do. That's, if you notice, FY83, under the fiscal expenditures, it's $154,000 just in personnel.
Oh, yeah, there it is, yeah. Okay.
That's six people. That's a lot of people. But you're talking about a big increase in terms of the volume of loans, even though they're small loans. There's a lot of folks out there, a lot of part-time students, as we saw from the other page. Now, we don't know how many people would borrow. That's the other thing. These are just guesses. We have no idea how many people would even want to burden themselves with a $24 or a $48 or a $60 a month payment to go part-time.
What's contractual
expenses are broken out. We would, repayment books, we give them a repayment book, and it costs $3 per loan. Computer time is the big one. You have to, terminals cost us $2,000 a month, and we need one for each of those positions above it, and then the phones and utilities. Commodities are the forms, loan forms.
Mm-hmm.
And then the one-time equipment costs, those go down.
So it'll be the third year before the income exceeded the expenses, huh?
That's correct. And that wouldn't last for long. That wouldn't continue that way unless we had a stabilization of enrollments, you know, as long as we have more and more people enrolling.
Yeah.
The thing is, there are no grace periods, there are no deferment periods with this loan. You borrow it, and 120 days after school starts, you have to pay it back. Start. That's the way it's written. And it's 5% interest, too. You should note that. And again, I have no idea the magnitude of it. Possibly Mr. Kirk can address the need for it, or the magnitude from the student's point of view.
You want to? Yeah, come on up to the table there, Ken. And give you a good time. Huh?
Fading fast. It's a rose that's fading today.
Oh. It's on
the record, folks.
He's talking about how hard you've been working, Sally.
Hey, we're all fading, but I didn't mean to say that.
I know, you didn't call me a rose. That's on the record, you, Sally.
For the record, I'm Ken Kirk, the director of the Alaska Statewide Student Association. Originally, when we looked at this bill, our immediate reaction was that the payback schedule was too tight, that it would be a real problem for most students. As we've looked at this in the longer view, I think that's the whole idea. You see, that way most students won't take this out unless they really need it, because it is a fairly stringent payback schedule. And I think this is mainly going to be used by the student who is working but not making all that much money and just needs that little kick, that little emergency loan to get him or her started in college, started in taking courses to better his or herself. Y'all have the position paper, I think. We think it's a good idea. There isn't something like this. Some of the campuses have individual emergency loans, but not all of them, and they aren't by any means uniform. Most of them are pretty small. I think UAJ only offers the money for books at the beginning of the semester, if you don't have that, for instance. I don't think this is going to be used by a whole lot of students, just the ones who really need it.
Okay, Representative Smith?
Ken, I'm a little surprised at your math. I think it's going to be only eligible to those who can afford to go to school, because I could borrow the money at 5% and get 6.25% to 6.5%, whatever it is now, on passbook savings. I can make money off my loan. All I have to do is go down and bank my loan, and I'm going to make a profit.
Yeah, that's a good point. If you really want to take that much time, there may be a few of you.
Doesn't take any time to walk down to bank
the
north.
The problem is that every month you've got to go through this rigmarole of paying the thing back.
It's not too tough. I'm going to have to go through the rigmarole anyway.
You still have to deduct it from your checking account.
That's right. I write checks anyway. It doesn't cost me anything to write a check. The checking account plan I have. I'm not going to make a lot, it's peanuts, but the person who has enough money to go to school, we're back into, they're not very, you know, they're crazy if they don't take advantage of it, even for a few bucks.
I hadn't thought of that aspect of it, primarily because my thinking was the fact that it's been my experience that there are many, many people who, with this, could eventually get their degrees where they couldn't otherwise. And I'm not sure that, and I agree with your point, Sally, but I'm not sure that the people that would be applying for this would do it to make money.
Well, I know what you're saying. I wish there were some way we could target it to the people who actually needed it. And if we were going to do that, I think 120 days is not enough time. Because if you're paying while you're still in school, the purposes of getting your loan have just been counterproductive to your getting that loan. You're paying while you're being paid not to. That's what bothers me about it. And I think it's like the letter that we have in the file from Person Out in the Bush, where there's no economic base, you've got a totally different problem. And I think that those are the people that are both helped and hurt by the bill. They're the people that are going to need the money to pay the tuition. But they're going to school, they have no access to a job until they get some skills that might be available in school, and they've got to be paying off their encumbrance while they're still in school. And so it just kind of crosses over itself.
Well, are you saying that a person taking a full-time student loan, you think, would take one of these out also?
No, I'm saying that, let's say I live in Shishmaref, and I've got access to a community college, but I don't have access to a job. I'm going to be hunting, and I'm going to be fishing, and I'm going to be doing the repairs on my home or whatever, you know, the subsistence lifestyle. I want to take a few courses. I might want to migrate into Nome and get a job. But I've got access through telecommunications to take a couple of courses if I pay the tuition. I don't have any money. So I pay my tuition, and I start going to school, and all of a sudden in the middle of the course, I'm liable for $24 or whatever it is. I don't have $24. That's why I had to get the loan. I don't have any place to go to get the $24 unless I quit school and leave the village. And then I've loaned the money to take the course. I've canceled the course because I owe on the course before I've completed it, and I have nowhere to go to get the money.
But no, they don't owe on until they complete it, Sally. The course only lasts
120 days.
That's 3 months.
But it doesn't always work that way, does it?
I don't know of any courses that are more than a 3 month period.
Not the course itself. Most of them are only one semester.
Yeah.
Okay, but if you get.
But if you're talking about a program of study.
Yeah.
That's different.
Yeah. And as I said, this wasn't in my thinking. This was to help people who had started. And although, as I say, you do have an excellent point, I don't, it's my own conviction that the incident you're describing would be kind of far removed.
I bet it isn't. From my experience with the villages, there's a real, real effort out there to get a higher education, and there's a real reluctance to leave the village. And as we bring secondary education into the villages, there's less familiarity with the main urban centers for post-secondary
education.
What
would you suggest then as an amendment?
That's where I'm kind of hung up, because I see kind of a melding of two worlds that... It's a real tough one. I think for the main part, those who are in an urban setting and want to take part-time programs can afford the part-time coursework without a loan. If I'm a teacher and I'm going for my next certificate, which is generally what you get for part-time students, or I take recreational courses, which is what I do a lot, I don't need the loan, but kind of crazy not to go get one.
Yeah, how about 8%? Would you go for that? That would eliminate any profit to hold on that part.
I don't know if 8% is right, but it should be at least equal to passbook savings.
Which is right now?
6.25, 6.5 or something. They've kind of been bouncing around.
Yeah.
Well, 6%. Let's say 6%, because no one's just going to do it for a quarter of a percent.
Yeah, it should be close to that passbook savings, just to keep, you know, the nickel and dimers for making the nickel and dimes. It's crazy. And it's what it costs the state to process the darn paperwork that's the real cost.
Yeah, we're looking at $4 million that very first year. And about $1 million each year after that. And so, I would think that maybe we could structure this one. Could it be structured in such a way that it would be self-sustaining? What would interest rate would that take?
Ooh, pretty high.
You'd have to have a very high interest rate because of the projected growth in the number of students in the state. That's the real problem. We're showing more and more students every year. You know, one other point. Just a working session or a meeting?
Yeah, just working.
Okay.
Yeah. One
of the things
we work when we meet.
Okay, yes, you do. One of the things we might want to put in the bill somewhere would be a minimum monthly payment or something like that too. You know, they have 12 months, but if a person only borrows $100 from us, what it would cost us to produce all the paperwork and everything and string them over 12 months of payments and the accounting behind it, at 10
bucks a month or whatever, it would hardly be worth it. So maybe a minimum monthly payment might be something we need to consider somewhere too. And I don't know if we put that in. I can talk to Betty about that. I didn't think about it until now.
Yeah.
What I was thinking was your example you were using of the person that maybe borrows the $200 or $275 out in the bush somewhere and then defaults on it, doesn't pay. We know that if we process all the work to take them to court, if it's under $500, it doesn't pay to try to drag somebody through the courts because it costs the state of Alaska considerably more by the time we're done. There would be a potential for writing off a whole lot of these in the form of defaulted loans or grants, if you want to call them that, because we'd be writing off a bunch if that happened. And I don't know how much of an incidence it would be either.
I don't either.
Yeah, I know. I think.
How could we, I have no objection to raising the interest 6%. Would 1% make a great deal of difference, Gary?
Not in terms of income, no.
But it would stop that problem that Sally has. Then if we could build something into it, and this is the reason why, or partly the reason why, the possibility of abuse that Sally's talking about could not occur. Maybe we could say they'd be physically present at a college rather than telecommunications. Telecommunications hadn't even hit my mind as far as taking college credit courses. In fact, I don't even know if they're available,
are
they?
I would hate to preclude that. You know, I think those are the people that really need the education the most. They haven't had all the breaks. And boy, if somebody wants to take a telecommunications course that's out in the village, that's the person I want to help. That's the person I...
Yeah. Well, yeah, I hadn't thought of that. The one thing that would be, and that was the reason I was so pleased with the repayment situation, was the fact that we put the money back in there, it'd be a revolving type of thing rather than a constant drain.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just an out and out drain for 10 years, so to speak.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. And,
no forgiveness.
No forgiveness. No, nothing. And as I said, basically what it is to me is an opportunity for that individual who might need a few more credit courses
mm-hmm.
for their degree, have hit rough times, can't, whereas the book's tuitions might make the difference between doing that and not doing it. And I have many people like that in my acquaintance. And this was one of the reasons for that, the fact that there is no emergency, so to speak, or part-time student loan situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's see.
Why don't Representative Byrne,
mm-hmm.
Mr. Chairman,
mm-hmm.
why don't we take this back and see if we can do something to quell those fears, so to speak.
Okay, do a little work session out then sometime here in the near future?
Yeah.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
That's fine with me.
How about you, Sally?
It's fine with me.
Do you like the basic premise of the concept of the idea?
No.
You don't? Sorry about that. You must not know the people I do.
You don't favor a part-time student loan?
No, I do and I don't. I think that we're getting into the nickel and dime stuff here that's going to cause us just a nightmare and a morass that it's going to be under attack, just kind of like the basic loan program is. And that, you know, I'm afraid it's not going to turn out to be good for anybody. I like the premise of it from the basis of the people that I know need the help and I'd like for them to get it.
How about a needs test? Is that in here too?
No, there's no,
no.
Need test. No. Needs test.
I don't know how you do it.
I don't know how you do that either.
There's one thing that this would do, and this would accent our community colleges too, because people would be more apt to that are going to community colleges would be more apt to take out this loan than people that were going to a university, you know. And I do want to see those programs accelerated. I think they're very necessary to accelerate.
Yeah. But these figures here that overall 75% of the people in the university system, including community colleges, are part-time. One question for you, Dr. Romesberg, is that 10 or 12 credit hours. Now, you say less than 10 to 12 credit hours. We're saying that anything less than 12 hours is part-time. You're saying a range here of 10 to 12. Generally speaking, what were they? Is that were a lot of these people taking 8 or 9 credit hours or anything like that? Or
what it is the university breaks it 4 to 6, 7 to 9, 10 to 12, and they really do it largely because most classes are 3 hour. There are some 4 hour in there, 2 hour, 1 hour, but most are in 3 hour semester credit increments.
Uh-huh.
And so you'll find, like in the 10 to 12, if you would, for instance, if you look at UA Anchorage, which you don't have on your sheet there, but you'd find that in the fall there were 481 people taking 10 to 12 hours. Of those 481, the vast majority would be 12 hours because it's a multiple of 3.
Yeah.
There'd be some 10 and some 11. But they break it there. And then the 9 and below are the part-timers that would be eligible to borrow, and that's that 75% figure you're talking about.
So what you're saying here is anything less than 10 hours is part-time.
No, it would really be 12 by our definition. So if a person enrolled for 10, they would be an eligible borrower also. However, once you get above, what is 6, when does the tuition break yet?
The consolidated fee?
Right, 8 hours. Once you get above 8 hours, there's no additional tuition cost for the additional hours, so you wouldn't get a higher loan. An 8 hour loan for somebody taking 8 hours would be exactly the same for somebody taking 10 hours or 11 hours because there's no more tuition involved unless they're more expensive for focus, but that would be it. Because once they hit a certain level, they don't charge more for tuition.
Except we're requiring them to have 12 hours, aren't we?
For full time, it's a different program.
Now, if a student already takes 10 hours in a given semester, does he lose his eligibility?
Can't get a student loan.
Can't get a student loan.
That's what, yeah. So the way you have it worded here, less than 10 to 12 credit hours.
Mm-hmm.
So if a person came in with 9 credit hours, he's part-time under this definition right here, right? But if he has 10...
Still part-time. This is simply a chart to show you the numbers of the people that are enrolled in that area. We wouldn't use that as a definition, because the definition for the regular student loan program is 12 hours. Anything under that, we would define as part-time.
Okay, part-time, I see, is as far as eligibility for a student loan is concerned.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. But the university wouldn't consider this person with 11 hours or 10 hours as part-time.
They would consider him a part-time student, yes.
They would, huh?
They would be charging him full fare, but they're a part-time student.
And not eligible for student loans.
Not eligible for our program or many other programs. Any program that would require full-time study, they would be eligible. Veterans benefits would be considered different.
So okay. Let's see. Okay. But 75% of them. So would be eligible for loans under this program. Right now they're ineligible for student loans, right? 75% of all the people going to the university here, and yet half of our kids are going there, right? How many students there in the university altogether?
Well, head count in fall of 81, or fall of 80,
25,000 degree credit seeking students.
That's it. Those are the ones. Those are degree credit. Now, that's not your non credit folks, and they couldn't get it anymore.
Uh-huh.
That's how many head count, fall of 80, so that's somewhat dated. There are more now. But now that counts. The person comes in for a weekend and takes a 1 hour seminar here or there and all that. That's all in that count, as long as it's a credit hour.
Yeah. Hmm.
has this advantage, Representative Brooks.
Yes, sir.
Has this advantage, and I understand that, and I do recognize the fact there are some disadvantages too. One reason why I'm interested in seeing this pass and seeing it happen is that perhaps we ought to be paying some attention to these individuals who would like to upgrade their education and yet are in a bind at that particular time cannot do so. And this again would provide another, to quote Sally, way of passing some of the money back to the people.
Would you envision some kind of a eligibility test, a means test, or needs test?
Oh, and I don't know what you mean by needs test.
Well, would everybody be eligible? The rich and the poor. Same as the standard student loan program is.
Well, if we could fix up some kind of criteria that would make some sense.
With this one, I seriously doubt that the rich would bother. Especially since it has been, since we are upping it here, upping it here to 6%. There's no real profit to be made.
Well, there's about 14% profit to be made on your money if you're borrowing it at 20%. That's what banks charge, about 18, 20%. So
I wouldn't imagine that anybody who was fairly well set financially, unless they were a real a miser, would even bother to take this to try and make a profit off it or anything like that.
Well, I think you're wrong. I think it's very likely to take advantage of it. That's how they got rich in the first place.
Maybe
$300 a semester, though.
That's fine.
Well, no, but that's $600 a year.
Grocery money.
You know, in the 3 or 4 years, you got $2,000 or $3,000 in it. And I suppose that, you know, every little bit counts as the theory. So,
well,
I'd
that
pay
could
20%,
also that theory could also be applied to the education. That this might make the difference of whether or not that they either eat or go to school. This way maybe they can do both.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be a lot happier if we raised the percentage to 6. I mean, if you're in the ballpark of the passbook savings, you are going to cut out the people who've got plenty of money to go to school, just want to dink around.
Really,
if you were up in the CD range, I'd figure, you know, they're going to be real piling on to take advantage. But I do think if our target group is people of lower income who are trying to take single courses while managing a family or feeding one or whatever else, if they're really sincere about what they're trying to do, they're not taking a course a semester like I do.
No.
You know, just showing up. They want a course every semester that leads to something. I mean, that's what this is all about, right? Degree credit. As such, I don't think that we're going to accomplish our goal if we start charging them interest while they're still taking courses. And if it's only 120 days, we're going to be charging those people interest while they're still in school if their objective is getting a degree. So I think we need some sort of sentence in there that it commences 120 days after a period of a month out of school or whatever.
That might be.
You want
as long as you're taking courses,
sugar?
You're okay. As long as you're not taking, but
okay.
I can manage to go.
You're going down there and sit alongside a kid and make your input here, because we're going to adjourn this meeting very quickly.
Yeah, just real quick, my name is Tom Stewart. I have no idea the feasibility of this, only because of the paperwork that it might cost. But if the program is only supplying money for tuition, books, and fees, why cannot the state deal directly with the schools and the money would not have to go to the student at all, and because of some, at this time, criminally oriented thoughts, the money would not have to go to the student whatsoever, and he could not put it in the bank account, and he could apply for it. The state could then send the money to the schools, and there would be no need to raise the interest for the student to have to pay it back. I do agree with Sally's thought of
bypass. You mean the Post-Secondary Education Commission, is that right?
No. I know what Tom's saying.
Eliminate that bureaucratic link, is that what you're suggesting?
No, eliminate the student.
Representative Smith, what do you?
Tom, whether it goes to the person directly or to the school, the fact is, if you've got the money, it doesn't matter who it goes to. I have $100 to go to school this semester. I apply for a student loan, they send it directly to the school. I put my $100 into savings, and I've got my repayment of the loan plus.
That's where your credibility check, or your check on whether they need it or not would come in, your test, your eligibility test would come in. With an eligibility test, you would know that you don't have that extra $100.
The philosophy around here is that we don't want to check whether people need the 100 or not. The philosophy is if it's going to be available to one, it should be available to all. That's how the major student loans are handled. Anytime we've gone for an eligibility requirement, it's gotten beaten down. Not being fair to the rest of the people. That's the only reason I go from that area. I would prefer that there be some needs test shown. But every time we've tried to include a clause like that, it's gotten thrown out.
I hadn't thought of the fact that somebody could take their own $100 then.
That's what's happened a lot with the student loans. People who do not need the money borrow from the state for the full loan, $6,000 or whatever they, come up as eligible for. And then they take their own money and they invest it and they make money off their own. The Post-Secondary Education Commission sends it directly to the school after the school has certified that these people are in fact full-time students. Bingo, the money goes out to the school, not to the kid. But in the meantime, that's money that they already had to go to school that they can bank and make a profit off the situation. And so some of these people have been as unthinking as to go around and brag about the cameras that they have or the down payment they made on a car with money they'd saved to go to school. But because they got a student loan, they didn't need to put their money in school. They were able to go out and purchase items. Those are people it's going to catch up with later. But in the meantime, it's put legislators in a real, real hot seat as having authorized the giving of money to people who didn't need it and it's been taken advantage of. Well, we still talked about a needs clause and had no popularity at all.
If there's not going to be a needs clause if there is not a needs clause now, and there's either should be one for that full-time student loan program, if there's going to be one put on this, but the idea of an emergency setup is fantastic.
I agree.
But, and as long as, if people are doing that sort of acts on the full-time program, then why stop them from doing it on the short-time program? Not exactly why stop them, but why not take the chance on the emergency program also?
I think because we got burned once.
Well, I think you're going to get burned on the whole program. I think half the people are going to claim federal bankruptcy anyway in 10 years.
Yeah.
Let's do this. Let's lay this bill aside so we do some research on it, get some more information on it, then have a work session on it maybe next week. But before we do, let's hear Dr. Roseberg.
Well, I was just going to say, hearing what he was saying, that one idea we may want to toy with, and I haven't even talked with Representative Cato about it, but to address that kind of a situation is we could impose a sign-off by the school indicating that this person demonstrates unusual need, because normally the school does know if a person goes in there. In my office, goodness knows, I have the applications come in by the thousands. We have no idea if it's from some guy that's putting it in the bank or anything else, but the school knows if somebody's having problems and needs an emergency source, and we could have a sign-off by the school would sure cut that $15,000 way down. And you might be able to address that group. When you were talking there, I thought about that, because I know financial aid officers at the school usually know about the cases. So it's something we may want to talk about. I'd like to talk about with Representative Cato when we go back and look at this bill.
There's got to be a way of having it better, because otherwise we're going to defeat the program, because if we send this up to finance, we're just going to forget it, and we're going to destroy the whole concept. So let's do that then on that.
on that part.
I'm very amenable to that.
You agreeable? You agreeable?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay.
That's like I said, I did it.
Well, here's our student loan bill right here now, the committee substitute that we prepared on 709. Why don't you take a quick look at that?
I did.
I did.
And is there, are we in agreeable with that? It's got in there the things that the committee wanted, so I would say that if we hear, do I hear a motion then to move this out with individual recommendations?
I so move.
Okay, agreeable? We will all do it then. No objections, we'll do it.
We don't have a final draft.
I hope there's no kicker in there.
Can I get signatures or with the
I think now or be uncomfortable?
I'm like Joe, I feel safe.
I was born and raised here.
Oh, Joe?
As long as you check replace with CS, because right now it's just the
S. Where have I ran into you before?
On the telephone?
Probably all over.
Who do you work for?
I am now employed by the 319 Corporation. But I don't
something last year and I can't.
Perhaps
the New York bar.